We want to talk about money now, but hey, depending on where you grew up, how you grew up, how wealthy you are, you may not want to have that conversation. Heck, you may not even want to discuss money with your partner. Maybe you have one of those mixed marriages. You're a spender, she's a saver. Oh, here's a question. Do you keep some of your purchases secret? What? This old thing? No, I've had this dress for years. Go on, tell me, what's your taboo? Do you talk about money openly with your partner or your family? Have you ever kept a financial secret from your partner? Why did you do that? And for a relationship to last, do you have to have a similar attitude to managing your money? 1-300-222-5576. Fenella Souter is with me. She's produced a four-part series for RN called Money, It's Personal. And on the line, joining us from India, is one of the contributors to the program, Supriya Singh, who's a professor, sociology of communications at RMIT. Welcome to you both.
Hello, Ellen.
Hi.
Fenella, let's start at the beginning. Tomorrow's episode is called Money, More Secret Than Sex. Does that say it all? Why is there this taboo?
Well, you know, it's curious, isn't it? I think people are more more willing to reveal their sexuality these days than their salary. I don't know. It's a number of things. In Australia, I think there's this whole sort of kind of a myth of egalitarianism. We sort of want to be wealthy, but we don't want to say that we are. So rich people,
everybody's middle class.
That's
nobody's
right.
Well off.
Yeah, yeah. And we can't have the politics of envy. But people say, I'm comfortable, I'm doing okay, I'm well off. But they won't say, you know, I'm filthy rich, even if they actually are. I remember my parents used to talk about people crying poor. And I think that's still, people tend to talk down their wealth rather than talk it up.
And Supriya, is that an Australian thing? I mean, you came to Australia from India specifically to research couples and how they talk to each other about money. What did you find out?
Well, I was a bit surprised because of this. And actually, one of the persons did tell me that talking about money is like sex. And he was talking about, conversations with his married son. And that surprised me because it was against my own experience. My mother and I talked about money all the time, partly because we didn't have much. And maybe that's a factor.
And was this a particular affliction of Anglo couples that somehow, or families, that it was considered vulgar to talk about money in that culture?
I think money is a problem, a communication problem with many couples. It's just that money is talked about in the family with a wider group of people in India because money is shared within a wider group of people. But a husband and wife may not necessarily talk about money. It might be father and son or brothers or sisters who talk about money.
And so what about the intergenerational example you were given? Why was the father unwilling to talk to the son about how much money he had or whether he had money himself?
It was seen as something just not done. It isn't that he wasn't interested. He told me they had bought another house, that they had bought another car, so they must be all right. He was looking at all the signs to make sure that his son was fine. But just asking him about how much you have and, you know, do you have enough savings? Are you comfortable? That's a conversation that the father didn't know how to have with the son.
That's extraordinary, Fenella, isn't it? That he's sort of looking as if he's peering through a window thinking, look, they seem all right. He can't bring himself to say, how are you doing?
Incredible. And the other thing Supriya noted, which she can talk about further, is this sort of flow of money that in Australia parents don't expect their kids to give them money. But in India, you know, you can ask her about this, it's sort of quite different. So the attitudes of, it's very much sort of once the child's an adult, that's it. You don't discuss their finances, you don't ask them how they're going, and you certainly don't ask them for money.
And were there differences that you found, Fenella, between people of different, who had different cultural backgrounds in Australia, or who were from different socioeconomic groups in terms of how did they carry that forward and how they dealt with money?
Well, yes. And in tomorrow's program, we have an Indigenous man talking about money. And, of course, what is essentially the system that's essentially operating is almost a sort of socialist egalitarian system where I've got money, you haven't. Okay, here you are. You know, you've got money, I haven't. So I, you know, it's a shared thing. So it's quite different. I think our society has grown up very much, you know, we hoard, we don't talk about it, we keep it to ourselves. There's not that sense of, certainly not that sense of community sharing.
And what about within the relationship itself? Did you uncover couples who had made purchases and not told the other or things like this, tension?
Oh, yes. But we also, I mean, I was sort of astonished at how carefully some people kept their accounts. You know, one woman talked about her husband doing spreadsheets all the time and keeping receipts for everything, and he would ask her, well, what's this receipt for, and so on. And I think she eventually sort of called a halt to it. But another couple had never, the woman had never paid a bill. You know, her husband had looked after every aspect of the finances. Then he was struck down with dementia. And suddenly she was like, well, how do I fix up the electricity bill? You know, what's a credit card and a debit card?
Wow.
In her 60s.
And she had no idea how to deal with it.
No.
I wonder whether it's a predictor of fights between people in relationships. Is it right up there, fights about money?
Well, they say that it's one of the big predictors of divorce. But actually the couples we found managed to sort of argue quite happily over sort of 10, 20 years and still stay together.
All right, we can hear from Spreadsheet Guy. That's who we're calling him. This is this intriguing story you're talking about from one woman who lived with a man absolutely obsessed with spreadsheets.
You know, he's the kind of guy, if he hasn't massaged something through an Excel spreadsheet, usually on one page in Arial 4, that no one else can read. It's kind of funny, actually. He'll sit down with, you know, pages upon pages of documentation. I just sort of listen patiently and know that he needs to do that more than me. Yeah, my husband grew up really, literally with a dad who kept account of every single penny that came in and out of the household. So, and he's still an 80-something-year-old man who all his life has kept literally a pocketbook in his back pocket and has accounted for every penny that he spent of every part of every day. My husband's inherited some of that ilk. So we sort of, in the first 10 years or so of our marriage, once we had gotten back from living overseas, I definitely experienced my husband sort of going through sort of a long period of 5 or 6 years of very much that kind of tradition of his dad with the pocketbook, you know, and with the Excel spreadsheet. And I guess because I grew up in a country town and with parents that never sort of had that kind of finesse, so I kind of thought it was normal. I thought that, you know, corporate Australia kind of people sat down and sort of did that every month and went through all their receipts and annotated it. And I guess I was very naive. But as time went on, of course, I realised that none of my friends did that. And then I sort of realised, you know, actually, this is just obsessive compulsive whatever. So over time, just encouraged him along the lines of, you know, sweetheart, we could spend our time on other things than sitting down going through this level of detail. And of course, you know, he's a loving, generous person, so he didn't actually want me to be going through the pain of that. And I don't think he realised that it was actually caused such discomfort for me.
That's an extraordinary story. So Priya, the couples you spoke to, if they have these sort of incompatible financial habits, is it hard to stay married?
I think it kind of means it's whether you can communicate or not. And money is one of the most difficult things to communicate about. And sometimes it doesn't come out in these obsessive kind of actions. Sometimes it's just that, say, the husband doesn't really know what the wife feels about money, and the wife hasn't told the husband that how she copes with depending on him for money. So this is sometimes what's behind it.
That's right, Fenella. It can be a control issue, can't it?
It can.
I'm not going to account for every cent, because then where do you end and I begin?
Well, that's true. But I think she also, that woman was very understanding about it, that she saw that it had come out of his childhood, but she also saw that it was his need to feel that he was stewarding the family, you know, that was his role and the sort of pressures of being the breadwinner and was everything fine. So it was a sort of anxiety as well. And I think you know, you could see it either way, I guess.
You know, we have a case from your radio series that's almost the exact opposite. This is a deal breaker in a relationship. Here's a man who got an ultimatum from his partner.
She has pressured me into getting earning more money. I think about 2-3 years ago, Yeah, she said, look, if you don't at least earn over $50,000 in the next 12 months, I'm leaving. Which I thought that was a pretty lame threat. So I didn't push on that. So but I then just by chance I was doing personal training, so I just started getting more and more work. So I haven't quite reached $50,000 yet, but I'm sort of up to over just over 40. So she's hung around.
Oh, Fenella, the things people tell you. The things people tell you.
Yeah, well, they're a very happy couple, I should add. When they'd met, he was an actor and she thought that was very interesting at the time. But then 26 years later, the whole business of sort of being the principal breadwinner for the whole marriage was starting to weigh down on her, and she thought, okay, well, you know, you're not pulling your weight. So I don't know whether she didn't carry through on the ultimatum. I don't think they're still together, but I think, you know, we sort of think we're very progressive about gender roles, and I think we have a lot more difficulty sometimes when they're reversed than we think, especially when women are expected to carry the load. They can kind of get a bit resentful, I think.
And what did you find? Do most couples pool their finances?
It really varies. Some couples had completely separate accounts, right to the, you know, keeping tabs on what they'd spent down at the shops and who owed, you know, which partner what, which I found extraordinary. Just the level of bookkeeping would be mind-boggling for me. Mm. Others, it was just our money, you know, went into a pool. So it really varied. And, you know, just as some people were happy spending and some people, it was actually quite painful for them.
And what about you, Supriya? Who do you think is flashy with money? Who in Australia has money and is happy to let other people know about it?
I think if you have little money, you're quite happy to talk about it. And also, you know, there's some categories of occupations, like, for instance, in academia. You know, if you're a lecturer, you earn that much, roughly. And if you're a professor, you earn that much. There's no need to talk about it. It's kind of clear. But I think if you have a lot of money, then you go around talking, you know, it's God's grace or my rice bowl's full or the taxes are high, kind of edge.
And just 30 seconds left, Fenella. Tell me about the filthy rich that you met. Were they comfortable with their money?
Not really, especially if I think inherited wealth makes for a lot of difficulties for people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, shame, but that's, you know, they felt guilty. They felt, who am I? What if I lost it all? I couldn't make it all because Dad made it. You know, so there are all sorts of things. But even the self-made people were kind of talking it down. So I wouldn't say they were unhappy. I don't think it's, you know, sort of source of tragedy, but it comes with its own set of issues. Let's just leave it at that.
It's a terrific idea for a series. It's called Money, It's Personal. It's on Earshot at 11 a.m. today. Fenella Sudha was my guest. She was the producer of the series, and joining her on the line from India, Supriya Singh, Professor Sociology of Communications at RMIT University. Thanks for your company. I'll see you later.